Welcome to Sestercast, the Orphan Black podcast. I'm Jean McDonald, and I'm rewatching this series for the third time. My co-host, Kathy Campbell, is watching for the first time, so we make sure not to spoil any storylines beyond the episode we are currently discussing. Hey, Kathy, how are you doing this week?
I'm doing pretty great. I'm excited. This was such a good episode, which I know we say that pretty much every time, yeah. But I really liked this one.
There's some fun new stuff in it. There's yes. Some fun old stuff in it. There's answers to questions that you probably had, but didn't even know were a question.
Right.
And there's less gross stuff in this one.
Yeah, still some gross, but less of the really gross.
Oh, wait, I take it back.
Grossness.
Yeah, there's still, yeah, I don't know.
It wouldn't be Orphan Black if there wasn't a little section that made you cringe.
Yeah, I do see that I put hashtag ooh in my notes, so I take that back. I was just, you know, I repress yes. The memories of certain things that get unwrapped. But let's dive into it. And this is episode 4 of season 4, From Instinct to Rational Control. As the title, and as we've mentioned before, those are from an article by Donna Haraway about cyborgs and biology and economic forces. That we'll put a link in the show notes to that article. And before the show, we were talking about the best approach to this episode, and we decided we should probably just attack it scene by scene because there's not really an A and a B plot. It all wraps up together and it goes in a fairly linear manner. So it makes sense, I think, to start at the beginning and end at the end.
And we will be bouncing around a lot. That was the one thing about this episode is we bounced around, and yet it all like is linked in the timeline. So,
correct.
Yeah.
Yeah. So this episode opens up with MK, and she is, as usual, on her computers, hacking into information about Dyad. And there's a great soundtrack going on in the background, which is a tune called Smash It Up by the International Noise Conspiracy, which is a great band name. I had not.
That is so great.
And it really actually quite, appropriate for MK, because conspiracy is what she's digging into. We get the tiniest bit of information that I don't remember from the last time I watched this, but she finds kind of the dyad like board structure, and Marianne Bowles, who was in end of season 2, beginning of season 3, the woman from Topside who had the daughter clone Charlotte, MK is putting her picture into this org chart, but she's also X'd out. Yes. And I thought, oh, so I guess that's the answer to what happened to Marianne Bowles.
Yes,
she's X'd out.
Speaking of the soundtrack, I was very, very thankful for the music that was played because it helped mask the sound of teeth brushing. didn't quite mask the flossing, like popping. I have a hard time listening to like people that chew loudly and smack and stuff, and so teeth things are also a trigger for me.
Okay.
And so I was just like, let's just keep going and let's pay attention to the music. Yeah. and then the squeakiness of the floss was a little bit much.
Okay.
It's like when there's really loud kisses. Yeah. Like that's, I don't need to hear that.
Okay, this is a new thing I'm learning about you, yes. Kathy. I'm like, I totally forgot there was teeth brushing and flossing in this scene. And that was, you know, just to show MK and her habits, you know, she has a lot.
Yeah, her morning routine. Yeah.
So, but, you know, meanwhile, as she's also looking at the org chart, she has a blank space, like with a with no avatar, no photo, for somebody named Ferdinand. And so that signals to us that MK is interested in Ferdinand. And she also keeps talking to, you think she's talking to herself, but she's actually talking to somebody named Nikki. So she's got a dialogue going on in her head with somebody named Nikki. And of course, they will help us understand why later on in the episode. So that's the opening. And after the credits, we see Ferdinand. He's been taken blindfold to the rabbit hole. And his mission is he wants to rescue Rachel. So, you know, we did get to see Rachel's message, which is, I don't know where I am. Please help me. Interesting, vulnerable.
And also that Susan Duncan is alive.
And so he suggests to Sarah that her source, the one that, you know, is we know as MK, the one that that warned them about Iceland being compromised, could trace Rachel's message and figure out where she is. So that's his motivation for being there with Sarah and with Siobhan.
Yeah, because right? Rachel has pierced this armored heart. He's very obsessed is a okay word for it. How she handles him and treats him and has this image of their relationship. And he also gets very excited about the chef's kitchen, which I thought was adorable.
Yeah, that Ferdinand cooking was one of my favorite little scenes. And I think, you know, we're supposed to understand Ferdinand is more than a just evil mastermind or henchman or anything like that. You know, that like if you go back and think about some of the people who have been really terrible, you know, who are now dead in this series, you can't picture any of them cooking a frittata and like exclaiming about frittata being the lazy lover's, you know, brunch idea and talking about Rachel that only a fluffy frittata will she abide. So that's Felix.
It makes him very personable in a weird way and shows that, yes, he has done bad things and, yes, he's slightly crazy and, yes, like I wouldn't want to necessarily be friends with him, and yet, like, he has this side of him that is like, okay, yes, he can have Rachel. They're meant for each other.
Yeah. So, and then in the same scene, so they're at, you know, they're at the rabbit hole. So besides the chef's kitchen, there's also the laboratory. Scott and Cosima, and they get a package from Allison that is, what did they say? It's like wrapped up.
Insulated and fashionable bag.
An insulated and fashionable bag. Opening it up, and it's gross because we know we've already seen this. This is Dr. Leakey's decomposing head. The great line now is, you know, Cosima holding the head and saying, "Who's the science now, bitch?"
Yes. I loved that. It's so perfect.
Yeah. And, you know, they do find this, it's like a tumor feeding off of the necrotic tissue that holds the thing, the maggot bot, the worm. Yes. So,
and you can see just how living that tumor is around the dead flesh, around the necrotic death of flesh stuff. And I like how Cosima too was like, Allison and Donnie are total psychos, but this is a gold mine.
Yes. That was funny. Yeah. And so they do, then we get to see Allison. She's having coffee with her friend, Sarah Stubbs. If you remember, her campaign manager, and also her co-star in the musical from season one. And they are just having the briefest interactions there, where they talk about, let's do Jesus Christ Superstar, yes, which is exciting. And this is how I recently like got back into Jesus Christ Superstar, watching Allison and Sarah, and also watching Tatiana Maslany on the Stephen Colbert Show. He is also a Jesus Christ Superstar fan, and she is as well, like, you know, obsessed. And so they did, they just started, they broke into song on that episode. I'll find the link for that.
Yes, I need to see that. I love when Stephen Colbert gets to nerd out about something with his guests.
Yeah, yeah. So that
he just gets so excited.
That's what
it's super cute.
It is. So it's real. Like the obsession is real with Jesus Christ Superstar. It's not just the characters. It's Tatiana herself. But Sarah takes off right away, and I remember feeling like, ah, we didn't get this scene is too short.
Right. Like, that's it. That's all that's going on. What's next? Yeah. Like, what? Just waiting for, like, what's going to happen. Mm-hmm.
And then you hear this voice go like, what is wrong with you? And I thought this was going to be like one of her neighbors.
Like, right. Or one of the druggies, yes, that like no longer has access to the drugs. Right. That's what I was expecting. But yeah, no, it was Trina, who was the formerly pregnant Neo
girl
person.
Yeah. Well, with the, or no longer a white eye or white contact.
Yes.
In one eye. And the one who had worked with Beth, as we saw in episode one of this season. And she thinks that Allison is Beth, and is yelling at her because she says, I told you to drop it. I told you I was a carrier in confidence, but you went to Life Spring Fertility. So that's basically what that scene is designed to deliver to us, is a clue about,
yes,
what the Neos are up to, and
a new location for them to science,
new location and opportunities for mixing it up even more with, yes, people pretending to be other people. But we'll get to that too. Right. So,
Allison follows Trina, right,
yeah,
and gets a picture.
Yeah. She was very
clever.
So that
she can send it and be like, hey, what's going on? And yeah.
Right. Yeah. So then as she has that photo, the scene switches back to the rabbit hole, and it's Mrs. S and Sarah and Felix. So Felix is there, and he's, you know, sorry he that he blew Sarah off before when she wanted help. And if he, you know, had known about the worm, he would have helped her. I mean, he's not that cold-hearted of a brother.
Yeah.
And meanwhile, Allison is sending them a photo of Trina, and saying, like, you know, telling them what happened, that she was accosted by this person who thinks she was Beth. And Sarah, she is really bitchy. I mean, I understand the worm thing would put anybody on edge.
Yeah, but she's above and beyond. I think between the fact that Kira, like, has been acting out too, which we saw in the last episode, and all of this stress, and she's having to manage, mm-hmm, like, got to keep the MK source away, but also, like, keep MK from everyone else and keep Ferdinand, like, all of these things she's juggling, like, and the fact that this thing is in her head. Not only is she a clone, but she has this bot that can kill her any minute, and she got a really bad scare. That's,
yes, like, that's right,
at the dentist. Like, yeah, it's, and like, Felix didn't tell her that like he had found Adele until like she shows up at the,
yeah,
where, just all of these things are definitely weighing down. And you know, it's season four, it's about time the stress kind of hit her.
Yeah. And so says to Allison, like, yeah, well, you know, go find, you know, do more research, go find out more about this life spring. And Allison is like, well, you know, of course she's busy in six different ways, as a mom and also as a school board member. And she's like, I'm really more of an idea person. And Sarah says, like, no, you got to pull your weight. She's all mad. And then Felix is like, I'll help you, you know, Allison, because Felix and Allison are BFFs. So, and then it just, you know, that's great that he helps Allison on this project. Then back over at the Hendrix's house, Helena is doing a collage. Yes. She's cut out babies, pictures of babies, and is making a baby collage, which Donnie remarks on, like, oh, that's nice. And she says, it's very cuddling.
Yes. I was like, that's so sweet. So she's kind of having this Zen moment, being able to like do arts and crafts and just like almost like a vision board of a happy, healthy baby.
And so Donnie takes the opportunity to talk to Helena about how these things actually put Allison on edge, you know, and letting her know that they tried very hard to have a child themselves, and that it was, you know, it was a very hard time for them, and that he's basically saying, you know, could we be more sensitive to Allison's feelings, like maybe not hang up a baby collage in
right. the house.
So, and I like how Donnie says at the end of it, he says, okay, good talk.
Yeah.
Good talk.
He's just like, okay, yeah, we're gonna, this is good. Like he knew how much it was hurting Allison and knew that Helena wouldn't understand, like just generally, like basically she couldn't infer what was going on.
Right.
And so being able to explain it, like sit down and actually have this conversation, helps, you know, bring plot along too.
Right.
As we find out at the end, but that doesn't matter right now.
Right. And, so then, we're back with Sarah and she's at Dizzy's apartment. I like this character, Dizzy, so much.
Yes.
So he's from New Brunswick. You know, he's Canadian and he's from this, you know, eastern province, which I think accounts for the awesome accent that he has. You know, it's like kind of a Canadian drawl. And I've been enjoying that whenever he comes on screen. I just like listening to him talk.
And Sarah wants to get connected with MK again.
So he has like, MK. He's managed to communicate with MK, and she's actually on his screen to talk to Sarah. And Sarah tells her about Susan Duncan and the message, and she has the file on a thumb drive, and MK wants to see the file. I like how she says, put it in the USB port. Like,
like where else are you going to do it? But okay.
But Sarah says like, well, if I send you this, then we have to meet in person. Next time we have to meet in person. And, so that was the deal with MK. So now MK has that file, and will, you know, from Sarah's point of view, MK will be figuring out where Susan Duncan is, because Sarah believes that Susan Duncan is the one who can remove the worm bot.
Yeah, she's the one that knows that tech and can do it safely.
Yeah. So, meanwhile, back with Allison and Donnie and Felix.
Yes, they arrive at the fertility clinic and Allison hands over these clear, concise, color-coordinated documents, because that's what Allison does. She does the research. She puts it all together in an easy-to-manage manner, and hands over, I identification as well that are linked to real people with real medical records and all of this stuff. And it's like, great. And then Donnie being completely clueless is like, okay, who's the couple? Yeah. Since Allison doesn't have one. And Felix is just like, oh, honey.
Right. Yeah, because Allison can't be part of this because Beth has already been to LifeSpring. So Allison would be recognized potentially as Beth. And so she has to stay in the car.
Right.
But yeah, Felix rolls his eyes. And next thing you see is Donnie and Felix, you know, checking in. And Donnie is just like going over the top, hamming it up. As
Allison says, he's chewing the scenery.
Yeah. And it's really annoying Felix. And Donnie says, what? I'm just, you know, I'm playing a role. Because he's doing like stereotypical gay guy role. And Felix says, like, you know, Felix schools him and the audience on.
Yes.
He said, you know, any gay people? And Donnie's thinking he doesn't. And Felix says, no, you do. You know, just statistically speaking, you know, 5 to 10% of people are gay. And Donnie's like, well, not in Scarp, where they live, that Bedford Hills or something, or like, yeah. And Felix said, no, especially there.
Yes.
And he says, the point is, you can't tell who is gay, so stop acting gay. And that was
right.
That was good. That was a good lesson for everybody, I think.
Yeah, they handled that really, really well. I liked how they did that.
Mm-hmm. Then we get to the super fun part. Sperm samples.
Yeah, so they obviously need to do samples because they're going to do all sorts of scientific tests and like find out all sorts of things. And the secretary, the front desk person, takes them into the room and she stocks the drawer with gay porn,
yes,
which of course is not going to help Donnie.
No.
And as he looks, like, goes to close the door and looks out, sees their friend Portia, who's talking with the doctor. Mm-hmm. And so he calls Allison to tell her about that Portia was pregnant, mm-hmm, because they were trying to, the Hendrixes know Portia's history and that they were trying to conceive for a while and it wasn't working. But she's like 5 or 6 months pregnant. And so Donnie felt the need to tell Allison that. And she says that she will deal with her. And Donnie needs some help.
He needs some assistance providing this sperm sample. And then he just said that when he says Air Italia, I'm like, what does that mean?
What? Right?
Air Italia. It was so funny.
Oh, so basically Allison becomes an Italian stewardess to assist Donnie with his seatbelt / other things.
Yes.
And it's
so
hilarious.
Funny.
It's so funny. And he almost, like, as he's about to reach the destination, he forgets, oh yeah, the whole purpose for doing this
was to get a sample in the cup.
And yeah, he hasn't prepped properly. And then as the scene crescendos, it cuts back to the rabbit hole as Cosima is pulling out the bot from a really white, thick liquid substance. Mm-hmm. And it just is like, oh yeah, that was purposeful.
I didn't get that. Oh. I didn't quite catch that. I almost called you Allison. Kathy. she's extracted the worm and I did some Googling of some of the words she said, because I was like, she said, like, it has no scolex, and that's the anterior end of a tapeworm with suckers and hooks for attachment. So that's interesting because we know it attaches to blood, to artery. No cerebral ganglion, which I would say it means it doesn't have a brain. But it's, Scott says it's an artificial core. He says, I'm not even sure we can say it's alive. And then Cosima says, like, why did Leakey have one? Which, you know, we still don't know.
Right. And the whole fact that basically this is a synthetic being. Mm-hmm. Like, they created a robot organism almost that is acting like it's alive. Mm-hmm. Almost. It's very, yeah, it's very odd.
Yeah. So next we go to the undisclosed Susan Duncan location, or the bedroom of Rachel Duncan in a house that we haven't seen anything. We haven't seen at all. So we don't know where it is. Ira, so the caster clone who Susan Duncan adopted, we'll say, is, yes. And Ira and Rachel are talking about Charlotte's symptoms. So we had seen previously that Charlotte has a cough like Cosima's, you know, and coughing up blood. And so Rachel, you know, deduces that Charlotte has the clone disease. And she asks, you know, has Susan tried immunosuppressive therapy? And Ira says no, because in Jennifer Fitzsimmons, that made the disease much worse, much faster. So Jennifer Fitzsimmons was one of the clones like that Sarah saw, like they had video reports on her. Cosima saw her, I can't remember, but they were watching it at the Diet Institute, her like video right. diary where she just got really sick really fast and died. And it was very sad, even though we never really met
so
her.
Sad.
But
yeah, we had met her because it was Tatiana Masali. So like we have this connection with her
right.
immediately, right. which is an interesting byproduct mm-hmm. of this type of show, is that you immediately feel a connection, even though you've never met these people. Like this character.
No, that's a very good
more
point.
Than just those yep. videos.
Yep. And that helps bring us along as each one shows up. So,
yeah.
But yeah, so Rachel suggests though that because Charlotte is young and prepubescent, you know, she doesn't have the hormone levels that maybe, you know, she would have a different response. And Ira says he will bring it up with Susan. And so that's, yet another thread of this. I mean, this is the whole point of everything they're doing is to cure this disease. So,
right. That's the main goal. And that's kind of what was the purpose for Charlotte in the first place. Mm-hmm. I mean, not officially, but and as we go on, it becomes even more so that purpose thing. And yeah, mm-hmm. but that's okay because we'll get there eventually.
Yeah. So then we're back with MK, yes. and she's tracing the message, and she traces the recipient, and she finds Ferdinand. And that's, you know, we're like, what? she's, you know, this is a big deal to her.
Yeah, her reaction is intense and different than you would expect just for, oh, this is who it is type of a thing,
mm-hmm.
Which makes sense in the future.
And then, so Sarah's at Beth's apartment waiting for MK, but she's not there. And MK calls Sarah and says she's discovered that Ferdinand was her source for this message, and she will not work with Sarah anymore. And she does not want to be involved because... She doesn't say, but, you know, something about Ferdinand is a big trigger for her.
Oh, and then we go back to the fertility clinic, mm-hmm. and Allison manufactures a connection with Portia.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like, oh, gets all emotional. So they're in Portia's car, and she's Allison's basically asking if there's any new technology or anything special that she did, because they were hoping for one more time. You know, she just wants her own baby. And at this point, the emotions that she's seeing, she's not having to fake these. This is her real self coming through, which I think is very poignant and emotional. And it tugs at Portia's heartstrings, because she says that they should see Dr. Bosk, however you pronounce his name.
Bosch, yep.
And ask for Brightborn treatments, mm-hmm. which in the next scene, when Felix and Donnie are talking to the doctor and they bring up Brightborn, how perfectly timed this all was. Mm-hmm. And the doctor asks how they heard about Brightborn, and Felix is just like, from a very satisfied customer. Mm-hmm. So that was really smart, not give a name or anything. Mm-mm. And so they ask for the Brightborn packages.
Yes. The doctor asks the receptionist to bring in a Brightborn, not a brochure, more than a brochure, which we'll get a look at
entire,
later.
full setup. It reminded me of something that Allison would have put together.
Right. Then now with Sarah, she's concerned because MK has cut her off. She goes back to Dizzy's place, and says, she'd probably right to cut you off, whatever.
Right.
But he said he wouldn't help her unless she would tell him, what is the deal with her and MK? And she doesn't want to tell him, but he's slamming the door in her face, and she says, we're clones. And that really piques his interest. Says we're 22 clones that we know of. 9 of us are alive. So there's a little numerical pointer to keep in mind.
Follow through. Yeah.
And so Dizzy says, that he noticed the 3 times that he met MK in person, she always had different license plates on her car, and he looked up the licenses, and they were all defunct. So basically, he says, where would you have access to license plates like that? And that's, and Sarah's like, a junkyard, So they found her pretty easily. Then the scene switches to the Hendrix backyard. A very lovely, right. Sweet scene with Ave Maria playing as the soundtrack.
And Selena is burying her other babies.
Yeah.
And as she put it, forgive me, I did not know to feed you liquid nitrogen.
Yes. So I remember a few episodes back, you were talking about how the tank of embryos is a character in the story. In fact,
yes.
When Pouchy's people steal her tank, you know something bad is going to happen. So this is the end of this character. It's being buried.
At least they get a beautiful ceremony.
They do. And she says, I have your twins inside me, and when they're old enough, I will tell them about you and our adventures. And I'm like, yes. Oh, Helena and her adventures. And then we see, she stands up and says, goodbye, family Hendrix. And she goes off, she has a backpack, and she is going on yet another adventure, sparked by the notion that her presence is hard for Allison.
Bothering. Yeah. And I thought that showed an immense level of self-knowledge that,
mm-hmm.
she could, it would be a better life for her sister,
mm-hmm.
if she wasn't there.
Yeah. So, it was a very nice, very nice scene that you would never predict.
Not ever. I could not have imagined that was what it would be.
Pretty sure there's no other scene of a burial of a nitrogen tank of embryos that will like make you feel all the feels.
Right. Yeah, the emotions behind it were pretty intense.
Yeah. So then we're back with Sarah and Dizzy at the junkyard and the trailer where Sarah, you know, it's locked. And so Sarah's like, oh, screw this. And, you know, again, I really like Dizzy there because she says, she picks up a brick and he's like, oh, don't, you know, but she throws it through the window and he's like, it's a little messier than my usual approach.
Right. He's just like, he's not ready for Sarah.
No.
He's just really like not any of it. No. And that's really cute.
And they, so as Sarah starts to like climb into the trailer, Dizzy says, whoa, you know, that's a pressure plate bomb right there in the entrance. You know, you step on this and the whole thing goes, you know, blows up. And I'm thinking like, yeah, well, that was close.
Right. That's a good thing Dizzy came.
Yes. I would bring him everywhere. But anyway, right? That's me.
He's smart and delightful. And he can just sit and talk to you and hack. So it all works. And I love, so they get in there and they start looking around and they find a computer and of course it's locked and Dizzy apparently needs just a few minutes to hack into her system. If that just means Dizzy is really, really that good.
Yeah. So we go back to, Rachel, and Susan Duncan and Charlotte, Rachel hands Charlotte another message, but we get this sense that Susan has spotted this. They have a discussion, Susan and Rachel, about whether immunosuppressive therapy is a good idea for Charlotte after, you know, Charlotte leaves the room. And they get on this theme that, well, because Charlotte is the youngest person who gotten the clone disease, the course of the disease in her could provide valuable data that would help them to cure it. And so, you know, basically it's the you know, no good option for Rachel to, and Susan asks her, she says, what, you know, it's up to you. You can decide. Maybe we let Charlotte just get sick because we need that data. I was like, this is why Susan Duncan is Susan Duncan, you know, and Rachel is messed up because.
Yes. And yet it's something that I think even like Cosima or Sarah would probably have made those choices.
Yeah. For themselves, but not for another person.
Right.
Yeah. And that's, and especially a child, you know, it's.
Yeah.
It's pretty harsh. As medical ethics go, it's
right. But this is not an ethics are not their top priority.
No.
Yeah. Any kind of
That's
ethics.
That's right. I think you could say that. So then back at MK's trailer, and now we're sort of going into the part of the show where it, you know, like very many episodes of Orphan Black, it kind of like starts, it's like a whirlpool that starts rotating faster to its conclusion. And that definitely, to me, that starts with Sarah and Dizzy are in the trailer and Sarah finds a picture of MK and another clone. And it's like they're friends. It's like a selfie, you know, happy picture of these two girls. And she sees on the back the name of the girl is Nikki. So that's Nikki that MK has been talking to in her head. And is apparently, you know, good friend, you know, like her best friend. That's what it looks like. And they also find clippings, newspaper clippings about, you know, mysterious like fire people died in that, and these are these. So this is from Helsinki, and that's where this is the first time. And Dizzy says like, "Oh, she must. I guess she's from Helsinki then, you know?" Because I realized like when we first meet MK in episode one of this season, and you and I were talking about it, and she does have this accent, but it's not like a conventional Italian or German or French like some of the other clones.
Yeah, it's not very identifiable.
And I knew of course she was from Finland, from Helsinki, but I was trying to figure out if that was an important thing, you know, why aren't they telling us? And now watching this episode again, I understand it. It's like they want you. You've heard this, you know, that there was some big clone, you know, assassination campaign in Helsinki. And then, you know, now you realize, oh, MK was in Helsinki and so was Ferdinand. And
yeah. And this is why they don't ever say Helsinki really yeah. around, like connected to MK until yes. now.
So, but the thing that Dizzy says is, you know, as he's hacked into the computer, is it looks like MK has been tracking you, Sarah, you know, like all her phone and her, you know, tracking and tracing her phone calls. At the same time, we see Ferdinand is still sitting around with Mrs. S. He's anxious. Mrs. S. gets a text from Sarah saying that Ferdinand should meet her at Beth's apartment. So, I mean, you knew right away that wasn't a text from Sarah, right?
Yeah, because Dizzy makes a comment about how MK was tracking Sarah and like commenting that. I'm trying to think of the word that he right, used, but basically, yeah. like duplicated, uh-huh. had access to being able to like make it work.
Like, yeah. So that's that's Mrs. S and Ferdinand at the rabbit hole. Meanwhile, in the laboratory part of the rabbit hole, Cosima is working and the lights are being turned off and on. You can hear it, the click of the light switch. And she's like, kind of annoying, Scotty, you know? Right. And he's like, you're going to want to see this. And she comes over and he turns the light. He's got the tumor sitting on his work station and he turns off the light and parts of it light up green, bioluminescence. As Cosima says, and Scotty says, yeah, I think these are markers. These are green fluorescent proteins that are markers that can be, you know, can be traced. And the reason that you would want to trace them is that the worm bot has the ability to change the DNA of its host. And they didn't say this, but I read up on it a little bit, that bioluminescence would transfer to the DNA of the host. So it does. Yeah. So that's a real marker that would be in evidence in the DNA of the person whose DNA you were trying to change. And that would be an easy way for them to figure out if it was effective as a vector for delivering genetic material.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah. So, and that I got from the science recap article in the marysue.com. And I'll put a link to the show notes to that as well. But yeah, the science in this episode is all like straightforward.
Yeah, it's pretty, like, it's nothing. I mean, it's all crazy interesting and whatnot, of course, but like it's not too much almost. It's all very real information. And I love that they're just like, why did Dr. Leakey have this? Why is this? Why is this here? Which is totally a question. Because, like, why? That seems to be common.
Yeah.
Just why?
Which kind of makes, you know, given what we know about Neolutionists and how they like, you know, modifying their bodies, you know, modifying the DNA, you know, you might do that willingly for some reason.
Yeah. Well, and especially Leakey. Leakey would do it.
Yeah. Now we go to Beth's apartment. Ferdinand comes in. He hears, you know, somebody's voice. It's MK on a monitor. I mean, with the sheet mask on. And he's like amused. He's thinking this is, you know, some like, well, he realized he's getting to meet the person he's, you know, been wanting to meet, Sarah Source. And she has it set up, you know, there's the computer monitor, and he sits down in front of the computer, and right at that moment there's the click of what? Another pressure bomb. So we were prepared for that. We don't go, what is that? Because it's been explained like five scenes ago.
Right. Yeah, this is on this this might be the first episode I've seen that it's very obvious the foreshadowing parts of it.
Yeah.
Like nothing is, I mean, everything is very deliberate in the first place, but this one is very obvious.
Yeah.
Like, and we saw MK making this bomb.
Oh, right. That was what she was doing in the beginning. I totally forgot.
Yeah.
I was just listening to the music is what I was doing. I was not paying attention to the teeth brushing or the bomb making.
Which is A-okay.
So now she comes out. She's, you know, she's not just on the computer. She's actually there in Beth's apartment and says, like, I wouldn't stand up, you know, to Ferdinand. And he's still like, you know, he thinks he's just met somebody who is like cold, calculating player like himself. And she takes off the mask. And he can see she's one of the clones, but he doesn't know who she is yet. And she says, I know who you are. And then she does like a slideshow of This Is Your Life about Ferdinand, which was fun to see.
That was really fun to get some backstory on him.
Bastard son of the 10th Earl of Essex or whatever. And learned how to kill people in the SAS, you know, so he was special forces in the UK and these, all these photos of James Frayne, of course.
Yes.
So that was interesting. And he was still like, he's still calm and cool, which is, you know, important, in the scene. And he's like, oh, you know, full marks for presentation. Then, she puts up the, same articles, you know, from Helsinki. And he says like, oh, I always thought a clone escaped, and looks at her and says, hello, Vera Suominen. And that's her name. At the exact same time, we switch back to, the trailer with Sarah and Dizzy, and Sarah as well, you know, susses out MK's real name, Vera Suominen, and Nikki. And that's when, you know, Sarah is like, oh, I know what she's doing. I know what her game
she's
is.
Like, yeah. Oh, crap.
Oh, crap.
This is gonna, yeah, because she needs Felix. Or, of course, she needs Felix. She needs Ferdinand.
Yeah. She needs Ferdinand. And yeah. So she asks Dizzy to borrow his car. And he's like, I must be crazy, you know, like he says.
Yeah, because he's like, I'll come with you.
Yeah, I would have said, yeah, that's a good idea. Like,
yeah, but no, I get that she doesn't want to get him involved.
Right, with Ferdinand and with MK, like, it's better if she goes on her own. But
yeah,
still, she needed backup. She needed Felix is what she needed. So.
Well, she gets
back up eventually. Yeah. So, yeah. So back at Beth's apartment, you know, MK is just reading him the riot act, basically, you know, like you gassed Nikki's family, like Nikki was her only friend, and you gassed her family. You burned her alive. You killed 6 of our sisters and 32 of our loved ones. You know, it's really it's a pretty horrible story.
Yeah.
And she has a can of gasoline. She's already been lighting candles everywhere. And then she pours a gasoline all over Ferdinand and the desk. And that's when Ferdinand loses it.
Yeah, he well, and I wonder if, like, how much of it is you messed with my hair and I'm now like gonna have this emotion. this emotional reaction.
But she's pouring gas on him and there are lit candles. Like, the fact is, like, she doesn't need to set the gas on fire. It easily could ignite any second, you know. So
yeah. So he has every right to be kind of freaking out.
That's when Sarah bursts in the door. So Sarah had called Mrs. S to say, I need to speak to Ferdinand. And Mrs. S says, isn't he with you? And then they're both like, uh-oh, you know, that wasn't you. That what text wasn't from you. So Sarah has burst into the room and she's like, no, you know, don't do this, Mika, because we need him. I need him, you know. The bots are changing my DNA and I need all the help I can get. Plus, he saved my life, which he did, in the dentist's office. And Ferdinand's like, yes, I did do that, you know, and I I can help you too. Like, I have money. And
I kept waiting for Sarah to tell him to shut up. Like, I just kept waiting because he kept like coming in trying to
win over
when really like it, I don't think it
did not.
Well.
And when he mentions money, MK says, $3.7 million, and he's looking at her and she, like, you know, taps up a website, some bank thing, and puts it in front of Ferdinand. And so she mentions that she's, like, gone through all his shell companies and has found all his money. And here it is, like, and she says, password, please. And, now we're talking really hard to believe password. He said his password is corn cob. If I had $3.7 million somewhere stashed away,
Now, granted, it was in multiple different accounts. Probably. So, like, because she said she went through
but
all
she,
of
she
the
was
shell
able to, like, to track where one account with $3.7 million that with one password he was going to lose, and the password was super dumb. So he's not a hacker.
Like the login, like the username, was more complicated than his password was. Because it was like a number and words, and like, I was just like, are you kidding
me?
That's
really funny.
You're not a very good, like, cleaner of high tech, but whatever.
So he does put in the password, and MK leaves, you know, takes the computer. She's leaving, and Sarah is really, you know, upset with her. She says, you used me, like, you basically got me out of Iceland to bring me here, you know, because you wanted to find Ferdinand.
Mrs. S comes in to save the day using her bomb knowledge. Yes.
The next thing we see is Siobhan looking at the wiring and talking about what she sees, and Ferdinand is very nervous.
Yes, it's like it wants confirmation that there's only one circuit, because of course if there's more than one circuits, if they only cut one of the wires and then he stands up, it will still explode. And so Ferdinand understands the bomb making and Mrs. S, and she's like, yeah, it's fine, there's only one, but how about you wait until we're gone before you stand up out of the chair, just to make sure.
And and then they do leave the apartment. Oh, he does say, like, you know, when I get out of this, I'm going to be a little short of cash. So, and Mrs. S says, like, I'm sure. someone like you can make themselves valuable. So,
yes,
but yeah, he, so he does, he like has to like psych himself out, and then, you know, he does stand up and he makes sort of a little shriek as he does it. So yeah, I like that scene a lot. 'Cause of course, Siobhan, the bomb gets to show off her bomb expertise.
I didn't even think of Siobhan the bomb as that translation. I just thought it was because she was amazingly hot.
Oh, yeah. I thought we talked about like why that was such a good nickname for her.
I think we did, but I just thought it was because she was hot. I totally missed the fact that, of course, she has bomb. Like, I knew, like, I knew that she had bomb experience from other things and like her skills on that, and we talked about it and I totally forgot, but wow,
she's the best. And anyway, I like Siobhan and Ferdinand together, you know, like they're always interesting because, you know, they're like two of a kind in a way, and you know, they sort of respect and disdain each other simultaneously. So
yeah, they understand each other and each other's methods, but they don't agree with each other and like what they'll do because their end goals are very different.
So then we got the final scene. We're at the rabbit hole with right? Or is it the Hendrixes?
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're at the rabbit hole because Seema and Felix are there.
Okay, right.
They're the ones that are looking
at it. They're watching the DVD. So from the beautiful corporate, you know, presentation package that they picked up at the fertility clinic, they're watching the Brightborn DVD. And we get to see again Evie Cho, who the last time we saw her was in episode one, where she was hanging out with Dr. Leakey at Dyad, and Beth, when Beth came to get Dr. Leakey to sign her book, Evie Cho was there being ignored. So now we know she is the CEO and founder of the Brightborn Institute.
Which of course pulls off all of those triggers of warning. Yes. Not just the fact that she was there with Dr. Leakey, but like the words that they're saying and how they're going about it. And it's like, this is hecka like
shady. Yeah. I mean, yeah, it's beautiful parody of corporate misinformation because everything is, you know, the name is Brightborn and everything is like bright and clean. And, you know, we're just talking about babies, you know, and we want them to be thriving, you know, but we make them stronger and healthier. One, you know, changing the world one baby at a time. It's like, yes, I hate this idea.
It was so... Neolutionists all up in there.
Yeah. I'm glad that you are not pregnant anymore for this story arc. Because I wouldn't, you know, there's got to be pregnant people. And not everything's going to go really awesome with them. As you can probably infer from Brightborn's DVD. Well, I think that wraps up our show. Again, leaving us hanging a little bit, I would say, this time.
Yeah, they want you to stay interested. And I don't know about you, but I am definitely interested. I can't wait. So thank you for joining us on this episode of SestraCast. We hope you enjoyed it as much as we enjoy talking about it. You can find us online at SestraCast.com. We are on Twitter at SestraCast. I am at Mrs. Soup and Jean is at Mac Jeannie. And we are part of the Amazing Incomparable Network. We would love it if you could leave us a review on iTunes. Let other fans of Orphan Black know about the podcast and just share with whoever you would like if you listen. And thank you again, and we hope you have an absolutely fantastic day.